What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Mark's Remarks here on WRIU 90.3 FM Kingston. Today, I'm joined by a home run king and one of the top members of the Rhode Island baseball program. I'm joined here by Anthony DiPino. Anthony, how are we doing today?
Doing well.
I'm very happy that you took the time to join me on the show today. I've been very much looking forward to having baseball join the show, because I mean, like, I've been trying to call games on ESPN Plus for the past couple weeks, haven't had much luck with Rhode Island weather, but I've been very, very much following the team, trying to see how you guys get on, because just as we were talking about before the show, it's very interesting the way that your schedule is set up and the type of opponents you guys play ahead of playing in the Atlantic 10 in conference play. So it's very interesting to see just how you guys get on when you go up against guys like Texas A&M, go up against Washington State, Northeastern, programs like that. So I was very much excited when you said that you wanted to come on and talk about Rhodey baseball. So before we kind of get into this season and get into a lot of the accolades that you've received so far this year, I want to go far back. I want to know where and how did Anthony DiPino fall in love with the game of baseball? Because as every American man at some point has picked up a leather glove and said that they wanted to be a professional baseball player, and some have been able to go play youth teams, some have been able to play in high school, and some, like yourself, have been able to move on into college. So I'm just curious, just where did it all begin for you?
Baseball started for me when I was probably around 2 or 3 years old in my grandmother's backyard, my nanny's backyard. We used to draw a strike zone right on the house, and she would underhand me wiffle balls, and I would try to hit them on top of this big mountain she had in her backyard. And one day I looked at her, I was like, one day I want to be able to hit a ball up there on the top of that mountain. And then it was just gradually went on. And then watching the Yankees growing up, I was a huge Yankees fan. They had success when I was younger, from 2009. Derek Jeter, like, my idol. It was just growing up watching baseball. My dad always pushed me through it, too. It was just like, you're going to do this. We would go to the field like pretty much every day because we live so close to it. And it was like, you're going to do this. This is what you're going to do to be a baseball player. And then as time went on and I got to like middle school and high school, I was like, okay, I'm pretty good at this. Like I could play baseball. And then the travel programs that I was in growing up, it was like, you're going to play college baseball. This is what you're going to do. You're going to go to college. You're going to play baseball. And that's how you're going to, like, that's how you're going to pay for school. You're not going to, like, obviously, everyone's here to be a student too, but for me, it was always baseball, and then I could deal with the student stuff after. It's like, I got to work hard to be a baseball player, and that's pretty much how I got started, and then I was like, all right, I can play here. Like, that's what it was.
Travel baseball is one of the most very interesting, to me at least, like, niches of youth sports. I mean, you see, like, the closest thing is probably, like, AAU basketball with how serious it is treated. And, I mean, some people treat travel baseball more seriously than, like, high school baseball, like, high-level high school. So, I mean, just when did you first get involved with travel baseball? I mean, because I know some guys can get involved as young as, like, 8 years old.
Yeah. I started playing when I was 13 with the Grind, which is a huge facility now in Connecticut. I mean, we started in a real small facility where it was, like, 3 batting cages, a weight room, and that was it. And now he's got 10 cages, a huge weight room to itself. It was a multi-million dollar facility that he just opened up this year. But it was when I was 13, I got involved in it. And Mike Morris was the coach there, and he's kind of pushed me along through my whole career from the time I was 13. Still, he texts me every day, and he's just like, how you doing? Like, you doing well? You need anything? All this and that. It's like a family that I grew up in from when I was 13 on. And it was always not more important than high school baseball, just because high school baseball was so fun to play because you're with the kids every day. Like, you're in class with them, all this and that. You grew up with them from when you were a little kid. But travel baseball was always really fun to play because you stayed in hotels together. Like, it was your first time kind of living, not alone, but you have freedom. Like, you're in hotels with the guys and stuff like that. So it was a lot of fun.
And so then when you joined, did you already have sort of an idea about the type of player that you were, the type of player that you wanted to be in terms of, like, position, like, what you focused on, or did this program and your coaches sort of develop you and really help enhance the strengths that you may have not realized you had?
When I joined the Grind, I was a short, chubby kid just because, I mean, when I was younger, I was not in shape. They put me in shape. They whipped me into shape. They were like, you're going to be you got a good base because you could hit, because I was heavier than everybody else. I was bigger than everyone else. And then once that happened, they were like, yeah, you could be a third baseman. Like, you're going to grow into your body. You're going to be fine. And then by the time I was 15, 16, I was probably around 5'10", 5'11", same height I am now, and like 220 pounds. So I was like really getting into shape. And then they were like, all right, this could work. And then when I got my coach at the Grind, had a really strong friendship with Coach Serrato here. And I came to a camp, performed at the camp, and got an offer probably 2 weeks later. And that's why I was, and then I committed here probably a week later after the offer. It was kind of just like, I wanted to come to Rhode Island.
Yeah, so that must have made like the entire college process for you pretty straightforward. I mean, because like when you hear it from athletes across a wide variety of sports, you're talking about just like not really sure what you want to do, like really have to take the initiative to reach out to coaches to get themselves, to get exposure and stuff. But those camps really do a lot of that for you. You just go and do what you're best at. It takes all of that work out of it. I mean, were there any other programs that were interested in you, or were there any programs that maybe before you had looked into Rhode Island where you were like, oh, this would be amazing if I got to play for a team like that?
There was always the teams that were interested in me before were, I was obviously Sacred Heart, Maine, like teams from the Northeast, just like, because they get to see you all the time. You're playing in Massachusetts, New Jersey, Connecticut. It's just like those schools get to see you all the time, as opposed to, obviously, when I was younger, it was like, oh, I want to go play at University of Florida. I want to go play at Vanderbilt. But at the end of the day, those are reach schools. Like, you're never, like, obviously you can play there, but once you get to a point where it's like, where do I actually want to play and think I will play? Like, there's a lot of guys that can go to those schools and they won't play for 4 years. And then you go to a school, like, I came here and I was blessed to be able to play right away. And that's kind of carried over throughout my career at Rhode Island. And it was always just like, all right, I want to, now that I'm here, it's a loyalty thing. You're staying here for 4 years. They gave me a shot and now I'm going to take that shot and I'm going to run with it.
That's a thought process that I feel like very few athletes hold nowadays, now with like how NIL has changed the landscape of college sports and like the transfer portal and so on. But I mean, I'm curious, how much of an impact did your coaches, whether it was high school or whether it was travel ball, sort of influence the way that you looked at like college baseball? Or like, were your coaches ever being like, oh, like as you were going on, like, oh, you're capable of playing for like these levels of schools and so on? Or was it sort of like a learning process together where you guys were all like, okay, we're dreaming of this school, but then eventually you kind of come to the conclusion that this is the level where I'm best at?
Mm-hmm. My travel ball coach kind of made me sit down with him and we put together a list of schools. It was our reach schools, the schools that we think we could play at if we get to this level, and the schools that we know we could play at right now. And when I sat down, you or I was in one of the schools that like, I think I could play at this level if I got to this point. Like, obviously I'm not ready now, but I think if I get to this point, I could be a really impact player for Rhode Island. And that was just really important for us because it kind of pushed you to work hard. And once you make that commitment, I committed very early. I committed my sophomore summer, pretty much almost into my junior fall, and which was very important for me because of the pandemic. When the pandemic happened, pretty much everything shut down for a long period of time, especially in baseball. There was I forget what they call it, but there was a portion of time where people couldn't get recruited. And when I committed early, I had the whole pandemic to be like, all right, I know where I'm going to school, so I'm in a better spot than a lot of people. And then once I was already here and it was like, all right, now I can work hard. And I had the luxury of being able to work hard at the Grind because I had such a close relationship with them that I can go in there whenever I wanted, even with the COVID pandemic. It was like, there was a select few people that could do it because obviously no one wanted to get sick, but I wanted to work there and it would just get me right, and ended up working really well going into my senior year because that was the only year of baseball that I was able to actually play sophomore and senior year. And senior year, it was worked out well. We won a state championship, so we had all that time to prepare for it, which was really good for us.
So I have to imagine that during the pandemic, being able to work out and really just build yourself up as a better baseball player, you're working as hard as everybody else, but I have to imagine that you don't have nearly as much pressure because you had already committed. Because now you're like, okay, I don't need to absolutely grind like crazy to then I have to show out, hit like 30 home runs my senior year to get an offer. You had already kind of had that. So now you're like, all right, these guys trust me. I can go work out get better, but not, for lack of a better term, not like kill myself doing it, because I already know that these guys want me and I already know where I'm going.
Yeah, that's a lot what it was like. It was like, I know I have to work hard because when I get to college, I want to be ready to play. But it was not like, oh, I'm only going to have 1 year to do it now as opposed to 2 years. You know what I mean? Like, some kids only had that senior year to show out because there was a lot of kids that weren't able to play, especially on my high school team. There was a lot of kids that weren't able to play high school baseball at all because a lot of kids didn't play varsity as a sophomore. And then they would have had their junior and senior, which is two full years of recruitment that could have happened, even at a D2 or D3 level. But I was able to play my sophomore year, so I had enough time there for them to be like, oh, okay, he was good enough. And then I committed as a junior, luckily, because of the pandemic and everything. And then I was like, okay, I can just show that I can play my senior year. And then that was pretty much it.
And so then going into your senior year, I mean, senior year, Daniel Hand,
yep.
And so you go into your senior year, clearly successful, winning a state championship. Just what was sort of the thought process like going into that? Because you know, you're going into it, you want to show out, you want to prove that, all right, these coaches made like a good decision coming into me, and you also want momentum going into your freshman year at URI. But at the same time, was there also just like a bit of an added chip on the shoulder knowing that you had missed so much time because of the pandemic previously?
I definitely believe that there was a chip on our shoulder going into the senior year, because we had so many kids on that junior year team that were very good baseball players. Like, we had kids going to UConn, and then there were other kids that were just going to Division II or Division III schools that were just very good baseball players that just, when you don't play travel ball, like, some of those kids don't play travel ball, so they didn't really get the opportunity to show out in front of them. But we had a huge chip on our shoulder to be like, okay, this is our last year, we got to go out with a bang. So we were like, all right, whatever, we're gonna just play for fun and see what happens.
And so how big was the recruiting class that came out of your team in comparison to other years? Because I mean, that it's baseball was a very particular sport during the pandemic. I mean, because it's just like what you and I have alluded to, just when you're losing that much time, you're losing a boatload of those eyes going on and like boatload of that recruiting process. So I mean, just like compared to previous years, how many guys from your team ended up actually making it to play ball in college?
From my high school team?
Yeah.
It was just pretty much me and one other kid that ended up making it to actually be able to play in college. He ended up going to Division III school, one of the best Division IIIs in the country, and now he's at Albertus. But, I mean, he's still playing today, so it was pretty much just me and him.
Do you feel like that if COVID didn't happen, you would have seen, like, more like 5, 6, 7, 8 guys, or, like...
I think so, for sure. There was one of my best friends, Danny Carbone, who went to Central for baseball, ended up having Tommy John surgery, and then pretty much hasn't ever recovered the same.
Yeah.
But I think he definitely would have had a very good shot at playing, especially at a school like Rhode Island. I think it would have been a great opportunity for him to play here. He just never was really able to get back because of some complications with the surgery. So that's definitely one other kid that I think could have.
And baseball injuries are the worst, because it's like when you're putting so much rigor on very fragile parts of your body. And it's just, I mean, like if you play baseball for years, arm, elbow soreness, like that can just hinder you for such a long time. And so, I mean, this just popped in my head. Do you feel that the COVID-19 pandemic may have given you a time to really get your body into a position where you're maybe not going to get injured as much? Because I feel like that some people look at like having time off like that, looking at it both ways, where it's like you're able to really strengthen yourself and keep your body from getting injured in that manner. Or on the flip side, you're not doing the in-game motions as much, and then that may put your body in even more of a precarious situation to where you might get more likely to get injuries like that.
I think it definitely helped me reset my body to the point where it was like, okay, because going into my junior year, I was kind of overweight, and I was like, okay, I need to lose some weight. I was able to reset my body, and I felt the best I ever had. It was like, okay, I'm light right now. I'm healthy right now. My whole body feels good. And I feel like arm pain is something that is very prevalent in baseball right now, especially with, they're saying it's the pitch clock, this and that. But that time was a good time to really reset, and everyone was like, okay, I can get healthy. They only thought they had 2 weeks to do it, and then it ended up being,
almost an entire year.
Yeah, almost an entire year to reset yourself. So, I mean, it was definitely good for everyone.
And so then, coming out of senior year, you win the state championship, and you're heading off to URI, kind of now pandemic in the rearview mirror, just once you had finished the job in high school and then you were like, all right, I've made it. I came out unscathed. What was that sort of feeling like? Was it a feeling of relief, or was it more a feeling like, all right, you know what? That job's done, but this job's about to begin.
It was more of like that job's done, this is about to begin. Like, it was just a huge chapter in my life that I was ready to take on. And I was just really excited to go to college one and especially play college baseball. Cause my class for like my class incoming with all the guys like Eric, Brandon Chu, Ryan King, Ryan Andrade, all those guys, Brody McKenzie. It was just like, okay, these guys are like, we're close, because we had all that time for probably a year and a half that we were talking all the time, because we all committed and we were able to talk and we got really close. And coming in, it was just really cool to have, like, when you come to college, it's tough to find friends. You don't know anybody, this and that. But we had a group of nine guys that we were like really, really close with, and we ended up like bonding really well. We were really good friends, and it was like, I can't wait to do this.
And so then once you actually get to campus, you've got that pre-established relationship with a number of the guys that are in the same position as you. But then you also alluded to it beforehand that you got the opportunity to start playing very quickly. Mm-hmm. Coaches had a lot of trust in you, and they're like, hey, we want to give you a spot and you want to go. And were you at all surprised by that, that they were so willing to throw you out there, get you in the starting lineup as quickly? Or did you feel fairly confident that you were going to be able to compete from the jump at this level?
After my fall, I kind of figured, okay, I'm going to be able to compete. This is going to be awesome. Like, I can't wait for this experience. So I wasn't very surprised when by the second game of the season I was starting. And then from that time on, it was every game after that. But I remember vividly our first fall scrimmage. We played UConn at UConn. And I saw that I was in the lineup and I was batting fourth and I was playing every inning. So I was like, oh my God. And Coach T pulls me aside and he's like, we're throwing you in the fire. Like, go do something. My first at bat, I'm facing Reggie Crawford, who was drafted 30th overall. And I'm like, oh boy, I've never seen this velocity in my life. He's throwing 100 miles an hour from the left side. I ended up having a 7-pitch at bat strikeout, but I was like, okay, like, that was competitive. Like, that's a quality at bat in college baseball. In Major League Baseball, it's a quality at bat. But yeah, I kind of knew from then, it was like, all right, I'm gonna go from here on out.
And that's like the interesting thing about baseball as well, is like when you look at other sports and you get into a position where like you strike out or something like that. In other sports, like say you're playing soccer and you're a forward, you're not scoring, that can really hinder your confidence a lot. And it's like, because the playing field is slightly more level. But when you're going up and when you're playing baseball and you're going up against a pitcher like that and who's throwing gas, throwing pitches that you do not see. As a freshman, working in at bat like that must have just truly filled you with an immense amount of confidence. But also, rather than the coaches looking at you being like, all right, well, he striked out, he didn't really do anything, they're seeing that you're competing against a guy like that. So then when you go up against an A-10 opponent, like a George Mason or something, and you go up against a pitcher that's throwing, maybe topping out with a fastball at 90 miles an hour, they have way more confidence looking at you as a freshman saying, oh, this kid can hit that. Yeah. If he can go up against a kid that's throwing 100 miles an hour playing for UConn and a possible MLB draft prospect, he can hit against a guy pitching at George Mason.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, just getting those sorts of at-bats, I have to imagine, really just like helped you out and enhanced your own just self-confidence and so on. And then just how were your teammates responding to you after your initial sort of arrival and just like your participation during the fall? Because I know sometimes it can be iffy when you got a freshman kind of getting thrown into the fire, being like, oh, so what's the deal with this guy? He's new. How come he's getting a lot of the licks at the plate? But how were the teammates responding to you?
The teammates were always great. My upperclassmen from when I was younger as a freshman, they were always very great to me. I mean, guys like Billy Butler, you talked to him, I think, 2 years ago or last year. But like, that's a guy that I will know that for the rest of my life will be like a brother to me. So they were always just like, they brought you in. They were happy for you always. And it wasn't just me. It was me and Eric. I mean, Eric had a fantastic season his freshman year too. And we kind of both got thrown in the fire from the second game on. We started every game. So it's just like, they love to see success, because everyone's goal at the end of the day is to win a baseball game, because everyone's happy about that. And all the other stuff after that is just like additions, like getting drafted to the MLB, that's a plus. Like all that kind of stuff, all that stuff's a plus. But winning, like if we win a conference championship, there's not going to be anything that is better than that, I don't think, because we're winning as a team. We did it. We, like, that's what we all live for, is winning a conference championship, getting to the NCAA tournament.
And so I have to imagine winning a conference championship, making the big dance, would mean so much considering how the season starts for you guys every year. We were talking about this beforehand, just the scheduling that your team goes through to open non-conference play every year is mind-boggling to some, but I feel like you guys have a pretty good way of looking at it. I mean, you're talking about, in New England, it's very difficult to play baseball toward the end of the winter. Snow, rain, just wind, cold. Like, Rhode Island in particular, considering how volatile the weather is, and I mean, you're from the coast of Connecticut, you get it too. It's very hard to play baseball end of February, early March. So it makes sense that teams are going to go down south and play against competition to get themselves ready for conference play. Not many teams are willingly signing up to go play teams like Texas A&M, go play teams like Washington State, go play like Texas, Rio Grande Valley. Like, those sort of schools that breed MLB-level talent, that are recruiting the best of the best of talents from high schools that only generate athletes. So, I mean, just like, when you first arrived, because now you've had, this is your third year sort of experiencing that, what was that like for you initially being a freshman, traveling down there and going to play those massive schools from the jump?
I mean, it was awesome. My freshman year, we played Auburn and Tennessee, and it was like, I mean, our freshman year, we started the season 0-13. Our first win was against Sacred Heart at home on a walk-off grand slam. Like, it was wild. 0-13 to now we're 1-13. We're like, okay, we could win. Like, it was our first college win. It only took us 4 weeks. But, like, we played Tennessee and Auburn. It's crazy. Those guys are, I mean, I'm pretty sure Tennessee's team had 12 draft picks from that year.
Yeah.
Like, it was unbelievable. They had Chase Dolander, who was a 7th overall pick. Chase Burns, who's now at Wake Forest, who's probably going to be a top 5 pick. They had just a ton of guys who was like, all right, this is wild. And then it was just awesome to be able to go down there and be like, okay, I can compete with these guys. Tennessee, we hit really well. Pitching is tough when you're facing an SEC lineup, because when you play up here, it's like, okay, we have the main guys, and then it drops off a little bit. But in the SEC, it's 9 guys that are probably going to get drafted. Like, it's just absolutely unbelievable. But it was probably the best experience I ever had going down and playing Tennessee in the middle of Knoxville. Like, it was unreal.
And so, like, what is, like, the overall experience like going down there? I mean, just, like, from the stadium to the atmosphere. Because, I mean, when you're coming from New England, baseball is obviously massive up here. Professionally, college, not really so much. And then when you think of sports down south, I mean, you're looking at, like, football. Like, you're thinking about, like, all right, football goes crazy. Basketball goes crazy. Like, these schools, like, that's what they do. I don't think people from around here truly understand and appreciate how serious college baseball is down south. I mean, like, what's the atmosphere like going to play at some of these stadiums?
Texas A&M probably had the best atmosphere I've ever seen in college baseball. It's the best atmosphere I've ever played in front of in my life. Everyone's into it. You don't look up in the stands and see anybody on their phone. Like, you see everyone's dialed into the game. Like, there's guys next to our dugout there, like, keeping a scorebook. Like, it's crazy. And the way they do their chants, like, it's absolutely unbelievable to see how into it they are. And my dad even told me that after the game. He was like, you see it on TV, like, they're banging the benches, it's just loud, like, you don't understand how, like, they take it. And then, as I was telling you before the show, with the 50 RVs that are parked in the parking lot as we pull our vans in, and we see these people tailgating, and then they're just walking into the stadium. It's crazy to think that they're doing this for a college baseball game, let alone what it would be if they were watching the Astros play in Houston.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And, I mean, even the stadiums themselves are things that people can, like, sort of fail to grasp. Because, I mean, like, you look at, like, URI. URI has a respectable stadium for New England, and it's a nice facility. Pales in comparison to even the lowest on the totem pole of a Power 5 school. Mm-hmm. Like, it is just mind-boggling. Obviously, like, you're talking about Power 5 schools that have a lot more resources, a lot more money being pumped into the individual programs. But, I mean, even so, you're talking about stadiums that rival AAA stadiums, mm-hmm. that are just filled to the gills of rowdy students that all want to see this team be successful, that take it as seriously as college football. I mean, incredible, yes. It must also feel incredibly daunting stepping into the batter's box and having people chirping at you, especially if it's a tight game. Like that, like the third game of the Texas A&M series, you guys were leading up until the ninth. I mean, playing in that game must have been a little kind of nerve-wracking once the A&M fans kind of realized that, all right, there's a chance we might lose this game.
Yeah, and they didn't stop either. It was like we're winning 11-8 in the ninth inning, and they never believed that they were going to lose that game. The fans never believed that they were going to lose that game. It was like just as loud as it was when it was 6-0, when we hadn't scored a run, and I think it took a 6-inning score run in the third game, so it was, 24 innings of baseball with no runs? And we scored on a solo home run by Reese Maroney, a freshman who I don't think he's hit a ball over 100 miles an hour yet this whole year. And he hits a home run on a hanging slider, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, we're going to score. And then it was just one after another, and it's 11-8 in the ninth inning, or in the eighth inning, and they never thought they were going to lose. The fans in there were like, okay, we're going to stay loud, and it's going to rattle them. The ball five chance, the ball four chance, it was unbelievable.
And so when you have experiences like that, both actually gaining the confidence of rattling a team like that, but also on the flip side, seeing how much confidence a team that good is, where they may be down 6-7 runs, but they still wholeheartedly believe that they'll go on and win. And then obviously, sadly, they eventually did go on and win. But how does that sort of impact your overall perspective on your game and the college baseball in general when you see teams like that and with the way that they think about the game? Does that at all change like how you look at your performances and your games going forward?
Obviously, you can look at those guys and be like, okay, this is how they do it here. So, I mean, they've had success over the past years. So, obviously, it's something that I should be doing because they're succeeding and it's working. Not everything's going to work for everybody, but the little things, like our coach, Coach Fisher, he always talks about the attention to detail. And he, at the end of the game, they were like using, there was one girl pushing, like it was like a small push lawnmower, but it wasn't actually like a lawnmower. It was literally just clipping like the small pieces of grass that maybe have grown during the game. Like it was crazy to think that. And he was like, this is what attention to detail was. And he's like, this is what attention to detail can give you, like this huge stadium. So, I mean, it's just the attention to detail stuff, the small things that they do that make them succeed.
And it seems like that sort of idea that the coaches are putting forth kind of goes hand in hand with what you were talking about, where their reasoning behind creating a schedule like this. Because, I mean, when you're a school like Rhode Island, like playing in a mid-major conference where you're not competing every day against Power 5 programs like that, you can do non-conference and go play against mid-major programs down south. Like there are dozens, if not hundreds of programs that are down south in warm weather that you can go compete against to get yourself ready for conference play. But that's clearly not what your coaches just want to do. They want to challenge you. They want to make you better players and give you those incredibly difficult situations because it's only going to make you a better player if you're able to fight your way through it. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, just like, is that sort of the message that they give? And just like, how have you personally responded to it? I mean, like, how has the team sort of responded to it?
They pretty much tell us, like, it's a gauntlet and you have to go through it. It's going to be 4 or 5 weeks of tough games. And then once you get through this, we're in conference. And that's when, obviously, we want to compete in the non-conference. It's very huge to compete in the non-conference. We win a couple games down there. We always go down there expecting to win. We never go down there and be like, oh, like, let's hopefully we get one. Hopefully we don't get swept. We're going down there expecting to win every single game. And if it doesn't happen, it is what it is. We got better. We learned from what we did. And I think that's worked so far this year. As we get in the conference, obviously it was a slow start with St. Louis, but then winning a series against UMass this weekend, it was huge to get back to 2-4 in conference. And we still have so many more games left to go. So it's just the team responds well to it. There's most of the guys are just like, yeah, we're getting better down here. It sucks that we have a record that we do, but it is what it is. We know who we've played. I mean, for a lot of the season, we had the number one strength of schedule in all of college baseball. And now it's 50. But still, having a top 50 strength of schedule out of 325 teams in college baseball is still very respectable.
And just like, you're playing against so many of these teams, and then you move into conference play, and then instantly the level of competition is a lot more your speed, and you start to see the entire team overall just competing way more. Like, beyond just, like, the going into playing Texas A&M, like, being adamant that, all right, there's a chance that we can win this and really fighting hard. But now you're going up against teams like UMass, where it's like, you're going in with the same mentality, but you're coming out of these games just with much greater wins than you would even expect going down south. So, I mean, just like that instant sort of switch from non-conference to conference play must also feel really good, because then it kind of, in a sense, reminds you, it's like, all right, we can actually win these games, and we are a very competitive program. Because I have to imagine after, like you kind of alluded to, going down there, going like 0-13, like 1-12, or so on and so forth. Like, yeah, you're competing against these big teams, but it sometimes must sort of drain you a little bit, or just kind of hit you psychologically, thinking like, all right, like, when are we going to be able to just like pull one out? Because a win, like you said, means more than anything. Winning is a team. So I have to imagine that like once you get that first like conference win, or like that first series win in the conference, must feel great.
Yeah, it's always really good to get in the conference, because you look at the standings and you look at them. There's 2 wins, 7 wins. And then you look at like the VCUs and the Davidsons, who can host teams from the Northeast to come down, 20 wins, stuff like that. But at the end of the day, when conference play starts, it's a brand new season. Everyone's 0-0. And it starts with like everyone has the same record to start conference play. So that's when the season really kicks up and starts going. It's like playoff baseball every single game.
That's like always the most interesting thing about it, is like over the past few years, like you'll see, like you look at the A-10 standings, Rhode Island toward the top of the A-10 standings. And then you look at their overall record and it's like 5, 6, 7 games under 500. And you're like, how the hell is this? How? But then you look at the conference schedule and it's like, all right, it makes a lot more sense. Because then you just see like, all right, that's the disparity. It's like you're going to down south to train, to get acclimated to the season and get yourself fit. You're getting hosed by some of the bigger teams, but it's preparing you to go play against teams that are at your level. And whether or not those teams are coming in at like 20-5 or whatever, they're 20-5 playing against teams that may be like glorified Division II or Division III teams just because they play in warm weather. And it was kind of what you said earlier as well, where it's like, you're showing your stuff during non-conference play, but it means more when you're showing out against competitive teams. Because if you're playing against a team where it's like they are so far below your level and you're going like 5-5 with 2 home runs, yeah, it's great. It shows you're capable of doing that. But MLB scouts and professional scouts are going to want to see, all right, can you do that against a pitcher that's throwing 100 miles an hour at Texas A&M? Because that's who you'll be facing on opening day if you make it to the league. So it's like that. I feel like that's a very good thought process. And it's something that I never really thought of when I'm looking at that schedule. Because I had always been like, why are you going to play Texas A&M? It's like you're setting yourself up for failure. But you're not.
Yeah.
You're setting yourself up to test yourself. And over the past couple of years since I've been here, it seems that your team has been responding to those tests better and better as each season has gone on. You've gone from your freshman year where you went 0-13 to start the year to now you're coming out in non-conference play with like 3 or 4 wins. And even I think, was it maybe even 5 wins in non-conference play this year?
It was 5 in
non-conference. It was 5. Yeah. So yeah, like you're coming out of that with 5 wins against very competitive, strong teams, a bunch of whom are like top 50 in the country. Mm-hmm. So I have a newfound respect for that schedule, because they're not just feeding you to the hounds. They're very much trying to get you into that sort of MLB frame of mind. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of wanted to go more into this like coaching, dive into this more coaching hole a little bit, and talk about just your relationship with your coaches. Because Coach Serrato clearly had a lot of faith in you from the jump, giving you an offer so early in high school. And so since you've arrived and since you've now had so much time playing under him, just how has your relationship with him improved, and how has he helped you become a better baseball player?
Coach C is someone that I will have loyalty to for the rest of my life. Like, he's someone who's trusted me from the time I was, 16, almost 17 years old, until now I'm 21. And have another year that I'm going to play at Rhode Island. And it's just like, he's always a guy that's there for me. And he's helped me so much throughout my career in the field as a person and as a hitter. I mean, it's just, he's a guy that I'll always trust with everything. So it's a great relationship we have.
What was the biggest thing that he saw in you during high school, during travel ball, that made him want to bring you to Rhode Island, if he's ever like divulged that to you?
He's never told me fully what it was, but I would assume that it was my hitting, because I've always just been a hitter, and it was I was never a plus defender. I was an average defender with a plus bat. That's pretty much what it was.
Were you always playing like third base, or did you move around during, depending on the team or depending on like whatever coach you had?
It was always third or first. It was never more than that.
And so then in terms of hitting, I mean, the power pretty much speaks for itself. We're going to get to that shortly. But I mean, was the power always there, or was it something, were you more of a contact guy that gradually was able to get a lot more pop in your bat, and then eventually it was just like, all right, you know, now I'm just hitting everything?
It was always, the pop was always there from the time I was really young. And it was just because I was bigger and everything like that. My dad always was like, all right, you're going to hit homers. Like, that's what it was. And as time went on, it was just, okay, the pop's still there. The pop's still there. The pop's still there. And as I got to college, it was like, I never knew what I was going to – if you told me my freshman year that I was going to have 36 career home runs by the time I was a junior, I would have said, you're crazy. I said to – me and Eric Genther were talking our freshman year. We were like, oh, it'd be cool to hit five. It'd be cool to hit one college home run. And then now looking back at it, I have 36, and we're not even halfway through the year yet. It's just unbelievable.
How does it feel after you see the ball go over the fence? I mean, does that feeling ever get old now?
The feeling doesn't get old. The best feeling I have is waiting. I like think in my head, I'm like touching second base, and I'm like, oh, Ryan King's going to get jumpy with me when we celebrate in the dugout. That's pretty much all it is. It's just awesome.
That's awesome. You sound like the exact reverse of the type of baseball player that I was when I was younger. I was always a plus defender and just could not hit for my life. I was the Andrelton Simmons of playing right field. It was just – that was why that dream eventually died. But – well, just kind of now, perfect segue going into this, home run king now. I feel like there's a crown that we can fully bestow upon you. You recently got the program record for home runs. You have 36 home runs now. I mean, just was that – when you came here freshman year, every player of any sport like has personal goals and accolades they want to set. They want to be able to leave here and cement themselves with like a legacy of their time with the program. Was achieving a goal like that, or like was achieving just a record like that, something that you set out when you first got here?
It wasn't even on my mind. My goal as a freshman was come in and play, like compete to be on the roster. And then I never had, like, obviously I have aspirations and goals to break every record in the book, because that's just what everyone wants to do as a baseball player. But as a freshman, you don't come in thinking you're going to hit 16 home runs as a freshman. And then now look at the record book and you're like, oh my God, I'm only 14 away from hitting the school record for home runs. It's never something you think about, because all you're thinking about is, what can I do this game to win for my team? What can I do in this at bat to win for my team? And that's pretty much all it is.
And so then how was the feeling different between the end of your freshman year, where you out of nowhere hit 16 home runs, versus now where you've broken the record, where going into this season, many expected you to break the record and then just continue to add on to it. But freshman year, it was completely unexpected. Just in terms of the reception that you got and everything, what was different about those sorts of feelings?
Freshman year was a lot different, because there was no scouting report. They knew, oh, freshman, big guy, he's probably going to have some power. Now they've watched 2.5 years of video on me. They can see what I don't hit, they can see what I hit, and they could pitch from there. And it's honestly, for me now, it's getting to a point in my at-bats where I can hit their mistake pitches. Because as our coaches tell us, you're not going to hit the good pitches. Pitchers don't throw good pitches for you to hit them. You have to hopefully not swing at the good pitches to then get their mistake that they miss middle, and then you drive that. So our at least for me, the way I think about it now is, there's not really much I can do to like change my, like, obviously I could change my scouting report by knowing, like seeing what I hit poorly and then going from there and being like, okay, they're probably going to throw me this. I have to be able to lay off the slider away. I have to be able to lay off the fastball wherever, things like that.
And so then as you get more confident in the batter's box and you start to see a lot more success, the old adage is that, like, all right, if you're really hitting your stride, the ball looks like a watermelon coming across the plate. But I'm curious, now that you've sort of talked about like having these opposing teams having that scouting report on you and like knowing what you hit and you don't, do you feel that over the past few seasons, at bats have become, in a sense, harder because they now know what to throw to you to try and get you to screw up?
At bat, it's kind of evens out, because as much as they know what you don't hit well, you know that too. So you're almost looking for that pitch that you know that they're going to throw you, and then you're kind of just adjusting from there. So it kind of evens out to where it's kind of, it doesn't get easier or harder. It's kind of the same.
So like what are some of the most difficult pitchers that you face? Like going off like this season, now you've got like the 2 years of the scouting and stuff, and you're going up against guys at like Texas A&M, you're going up against guys at like Northeastern. What are some notable like at-bats or notable pitchers that you faced this season that you feel was like, whoa, all right, like that was a lot, maybe a lot harder than you would have expected?
It was pretty much the entire Texas A&M series. I was in a pretty bad slump that weekend, and it was just like, felt like I couldn't hit anything. It felt like the ball was a golf ball coming in. And I mean, granted, those guys are some of the best pitchers in the country. They have the best pitching staff in the country. So I kind of had to take that with a grain of salt and be like, okay, throw that weekend away. Don't worry about whatever happened there. And then the next weekend we played Northeastern and I hit 3 homers. So it was like, okay, we know how to kind of go off that. That weekend's in the past. Don't worry about it anymore. And that's kind of our mentality as a team. It's the next pitch, whatever. Just flush it and it's the next pitch.
And so that mentality, is there anything else that kind of like helps you break out of a slump like that? Because I know like different guys like will look to their mechanics or look to try and focusing in mentally to try and fix their swing or try to just get into a better state of mind when they get up to the plate. But is there anything that in particular that you do that helps you break out of slumps like that?
It's kind of just once you get that first hit after a slump and it's like, all right, now it's all going to flow in. And that's kind of how I've always thought about it. It's like if I'm 0 for 11 with 8 strikeouts, it's like, all right, I just need that first hit. And then hopefully it all comes after that. And that's kind of what happened.
Interesting. And so now I want to move on to a new endeavor that that yourself, you're quite familiar with the baseball team, Home Runs for Hasbro. Is that's what it's called?
Yep.
A charitable endeavor, I guess, pretty straightforward, donations for each home run that the team hits throughout the course of the season. You were one of the brains that came up with that, right?
Yeah, Eric Genther and I created this. We were kind of sitting on the couch one day, and we took this class. It's a passport class for finance we have to take through business. And we were putting together our resumes, and we're like, dude, we haven't worked. Like, we're athletes. All we did was play baseball our entire lives. We can't work in the summer. We have nothing to put on our resume. And we're sitting in there, we're like, we should put together a charity we were like, we need to find somewhere that we can donate money to, because I think it would look good on a resume. And then plus we're helping people. Like, it's not just like we're doing it just for the resume, but we're helping people. We're helping our program get out there. We're helping Hasbro. It's things like that. And it's not just home runs either. It's pitchers get raise money for strikeouts. We get money for wins. It's money for hits, stolen bases, and home runs. So it's all that stuff together where it's like not just hitters can raise money, because then it's kind of like only the hitters can raise money. We're not going to raise as much. So we put it to where pitchers get money for wins, strikeouts, and all that kind of stuff, which was it's something that's very important to us as a team to be able to be like, okay. And it's kind of like a rivalry thing too, because you could use it as like, oh, this guy's raising the most money. I want to raise the most money for the kids, things like that. It's pretty cool.
And so then what led you to wanting to do something with Hasbro? I mean, were there any connections that you personally had or guys in the team personally had where it was like, all right, this would be an organization wanting to do? Or is it just one that's just like, you felt, you know what, it's a good cause and I just wanted to help support it?
We wanted to keep it in Rhode Island because obviously the state institution, we wanted to be like, okay, we're keeping it in, it's right in Providence. So if we were ever to do, we could do a visit there to visit the kids in Hasbro, which we haven't been able to do yet. But we definitely want to be able to do something like that soon. But I think we kept it because we can go there, it's local, things like that.
And so then what was the process like sort of setting it up? Because going from an idea to reality, I guess there had to have been steps in between. When you had proposed this to the coaches, when you had proposed this to the athletic department, what was the reception like?
It was, we had everyone backing us. Jeff Johnson is someone who's been huge with us about this. Like, he has loved every second of it. He helped us out immensely with getting us in touch with Hasbro, figuring out the financials. And then Meg, who helps us with all the social media stuff, she pushes it out there so much. Like, it's just, we have a lot of support with it. It's great.
And so then going into this season and then having that home run record still within reach for you, and then having the charity on the side as well as just an added bonus for that. How did you feel kind of going into the season in terms of how you wanted to perform? Do you feel that you had the extra motivation needed to really break through the glass ceiling, per se, for you?
I think it was definitely motivation that was added, because everyone wants the, it's a good cause. You raise money for kids. I mean, that's pretty much what everyone wants to do, is they want to help kids. Because, I mean, I wouldn't even know how to say it from, like, that point of view, but everyone wants to do it. Everyone wants to raise money for kids. It's just a great cause. And that motivation gives everyone, it's like, okay, I can do this. And it's not just baseball. Like, it's more than baseball.
And so then when you sort of like created the idea, did you have like a goal in mind for a certain amount of money that you wanted to reach based on your performances and stuff? Like, you wanted to hit like 10, 15 home runs as like a minimum to try and get up there? Was it just like, you know what, we're going to do this, and I'm just going to see what I can reach by the end of the year?
That was pretty much it. There was no real goal for amount of money. It was like, all right, we want to raise as much money as we can.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I mean, like, we I had seen it on Twitter, and I saw the original video of you guys talking about it, and I was like, wow, this is really cool. Because I mean, you see like different charitable stuff going on throughout campus, and like you see the Play for the Cure games and so on, but this was one of the first times where I had seen a team really take the initiative and do something from themselves, just like from scratch, to really make a difference in the state. And I mean, do you see this as something that can be continued for seasons down the line?
I think it could definitely be continued for seasons down the line. It's just going to take people that want to do it. And for us, it was like, okay, we're raising money for kids, and then we're going to gain attention because people are going to watch our games, and the way we perform, it's directly correlated to how much money we raise. So if we perform well, we're going to raise a lot of money, and vice versa. So,
just kind of going on the theme of this season and the performances that you guys have had going into conference play, obviously the weather hasn't been that helpful with a number of games. I think you said like 8 was the total games that have been canceled throughout this year. But now that you've moved into conference play and you're kind of into full swing, just how is the team feeling confidence-wise this year? Because I know last year started off kind of slow in non-conference and then picked it up, making your way into the Atlantic 10 tournament. And it seems that each year that you've been here, there's been incremental steps to really get to that ultimate goal of winning the conference tournament. So, I mean, just I'm curious, just how has this year and this the start that you've had to the conference season this year impacted those goals, or like, do they feel more attainable this year? Just how is what's the team mentality like right now?
The team mentality right now is great. We're coming off of a series win against it's pretty much a rival. UMass is a rival for us. And then the first weekend was a little tough because we hadn't played the weekend before. Our series against St. Bonaventure got completely canceled. We played a midweek against Quinnipiac, and then it was, all right, now we're going to go play St. Louis. We left not even 14 hours after we played Quinnipiac. We played Quinnipiac at 3 o'clock or 1 o'clock, whatever it was. Got done with the game at 4, and we had to be on the bus at 4 in the morning to go to St. Louis. So the first weekend of conference was a little tough. We went 0-3, played a competitive game the first game, and then we kind of just didn't do enough as an offense to win that series. This weekend going in, we won the first game. The second game was tough loss, whatever. Losses are going to happen. Our goal at the end of the day is to win the series, and we did that on Sunday. So I think everyone's pretty confident right now.
And so, I mean, like 2-4, only two games off of 500, and I mean, the rest of the conference is still relatively close. Just how are the coaches sort of motivating you guys to stay focused on the task at hand? Because obviously there's still so much left in conference play, and the record clearly from beforehand doesn't matter, since you're right now, honestly, you're 2-4 on the year. So it's still so early. So I mean, just like, what have the coaches been saying to you guys to try and keep you guys drilled and focused and just obviously maintaining that next at bat, next game, next pitch mentality?
Pretty much they keep telling us after every game we play, it's all right, we got to build off that game. We have to build to get better for the next day, because now that weekend's over, put it in the rear view. But the team that we're playing next is going to watch those games, and now they're going to try to beat us with what beat us the past weekend, see what we succeeded on, do all that kind of stuff. But our coaches pretty much tell us every weekend that our goal is to win a series, every single weekend, and it'll put us in a good spot in the conference tournament.
And so then as the season progresses, I mean, obviously I have to imagine that getting in and winning the conference tournament is the overall goal for the team, like it is every year. But for you personally, I mean, do you have any sort of just goals that you've set out from the start of the season to try and attain, just to continue building on the momentum? Because, I mean, like, no, obviously, start of freshman year, 16 home runs, you're at 36 home runs for your career now. I mean, do you have, like, by the end of this year, a certain benchmark for different stats that you want to hit?
Not really for stats. My personal goal, obviously, is to play professional baseball. It's been my goal my entire life. And when you turn 21 and you're a junior, that's when you can get drafted. For this, you can either get drafted out of high school, or it's when you turn 21 or your junior year, whatever comes first. So that's obviously a goal of mine, but that has to stay behind me. Like, it has to be like, okay, whatever I do this season, because whatever I do this season is what matters. Because if I don't do well, that's not even a thought. If I do well, it's okay. At the end of the season, I can think about it and be like, oh, like, this would be great to do at professionally, because it's been my goal since I was a little kid.
And have people just around you, family, friends, coaches, and so on, have they tried to get you to think about that at all anymore, or like just give it a little bit of thought? Because obviously, like, you've talked about that loyalty of like wanting to stay the full to 4 years. These guys trusted you. They want, like, the, you want to repay that faith and so on. But obviously the landscape of college sports has changed, and want to take advantage of when your stock is at the most high. And so, I mean, do you feel that, it, say, if you do end of the season on a very high note and you're at the upper echelon of different like power categories and so on, that you feel like that would be a decision that you would make? Or do you feel that you're more or less leaning towards trying to do the full four years and then making the decision after that?
If professional baseball was an opportunity, that would be something I couldn't pass up.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much it. It would just be, I can't pass up professional baseball. It's something I've always wanted to do.
And so then for the team overall, I mean, as one of the most experienced guys on the team, it seems when I was doing my my prep for a game that I was supposed to call last week, it seems that the team's very young. A lot of a good group of like young freshmen and sophomores coming in that are contributing. What, in your eyes, is the team's expectations or the team's ceiling, and in terms of just like the talent available, and then what and how the guys have responded to the intense adversity in non-conference play and then a somewhat difficult start in conference play so far this year?
I think our group of young guys is very strong with like adversity, dealing with all that. Because there were some guys like Jack Hopko, guy that didn't play a lot last year, but great baseball player. He's been doing really well so far this year. Obviously, Mike Anderson, he played last year, did really well, freshman All-American. Like, that's something that is just unbelievable, too. And the other guys like Scott Penny, Reese Maroney, Will Hindle, all freshmen that are like, wow, these guys are competing. We have so many young kids on the team where it's like, if we get to the conference tournament, I think with the fact that they don't have as much scouting report on them, we could win the conference tournament and then get to a regional, and we're going to be able to compete in a regional, too, just because of our non-conference. So.
And so then looking ahead the year after, and you've got these guys that these freshmen, so on, like you said, that can really compete, and like they don't really have a scouting report yet. But once you get another year of college baseball under their belt, not really knowing what next year could look like, especially even with just like what the transfer portal look like if new guys come in, what do you think the team would be able to do in 2025, your senior year and your final year?
I think that'll be the best year. If everyone stays, we get good guys from the portal, and everyone continues to improve, I think that'll be the best year we have as a program.
All right. Well, that just about does it for us today, Anthony. I'm so grateful that you took the time to join us. This was great. I very much love talking about URI baseball. I feel like, to me, that it's one of the sports that I've underappreciated for a while. I've really tried to pay a lot more attention to it, and now over the past few months, I've been really trying to be as engaged as possible, and I've just had so much fun watching you guys play and then just seeing the type of adversity you guys have been able to overcome, and just the home runs for Hasbro and all of that stuff has just made your teams and your personal story so much more interesting, and I've just I've enjoyed every minute of it so far, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing what you guys are able to do over the next couple of months. So thanks again for coming on today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Of course. And so then everybody at home, thank you all for listening. We'll be back same time Wednesday, 1 to 2 next week, and Wednesdays for the remainder of the semester. So we'll see you all in the next one.